The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
In this station.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed it is. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. It is the 22nd morning of the third month in the year of our Lord, 2024. And by my count, and I'm trying really hard to make sure this is right, after Thursday comes something we like to call Free for All Friday! Yes, indeed, it is here, and we truly have a free-for-all today. We've got one great guest lined up for you, and that will be the newly victorious Senate candidate from Tuesday's Republican primary. Bernie Moreno will join me in about a half an hour at 9:35 to take a combination victory lap slash strategy session on what it's going to take, how to defeat Sherrod Brown in November in the general election. So Bernie Moreno will join us at 9:35. But after that, literally, all of the program is yours. It'll be a free-for-all Friday. Any topic that we have talked about on the show this week, anything we have not gotten to that you wish we would have, you can choose. Anything I'm about to share with you in today's Top 9 at 9, any of these topics you've got thoughts on, questions or comments, by all means, debate points, talking points, we will take those at 216-901-0945. So that's the way it is going to roll today. We've got a very, very important Top 9 at 9 to get to. First, let's pledge. Patriots, stand, face your flag, even if you're alone. Just do it because it's the right thing to do. It's not about virtue signaling for us. It's about doing it the right way. If you are not a patriot, if you do not support this country, its sovereignty, its security, well, then just don't pretend. You can just stay seated or, in fact, really make it easy for us to identify you. Take a knee like you're used to, like the Marxist dog that you are. For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So Bernie Moreno coming up at 9:35. Your phone calls following that for the rest of the program, but for now,
it's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Top 9 at 9,
Number 1.
Video taken yesterday, you probably have seen it already, near El Paso, Texas, shows illegal aliens tearing down a barrier and overwhelming, dare I say, attacking Texas National Guard members. As they stormed across the border, the illegals are seen pulling the barrier open as four National Guardsmen try to keep them from crossing the border. This video posted to Twitter. by the Daily News. The illegal immigrants rushed through the gap that was opened, trampling the National Guard personnel until coming up against a second, sturdier barrier. Republican Governor Greg Abbott of Texas has called up the state's National Guard to assist in erecting those barriers to prevent the overwhelming number of illegals crossing places like Eagle Pass. Governor Abbott tweeted yesterday after the attack and video went viral, saying, quote, about the surge of illegal immigrants in El Paso, the Texas National Guard and Department of Public Safety quickly regained control and are redoubling the razor wire barriers. DPS is instructed to arrest every illegal immigrant involved for criminal trespassing and destruction of property. So that part is good news. Governor Abbott and the Texas National Guard are undeterred.
Number two.
Arizona State University professor Owen Anderson has filed a lawsuit against the school over its mandatory DEI training for faculty. Owen Anderson, professor of philosophy, says the training for faculty violates a two-year-old state law. That law forbids public agencies, like universities, from requiring employees to engage in training, quote, that presents any form of blame or judgment on the basis of race, ethnicity, or sex, end quote. The complaint alleges ASU's mandatory DEI training requires employees to agree that white heterosexuals are inherently racist and oppressive, among other subjective topics regarding white privilege and social justice. In my own experience, Professor Anderson states, I have found that this kind of DEI training is used to discriminate against Christians. Christians are the center of the intersectionality cycle. All other types of oppression are traced to Christians in this view, and therefore they can be treated poorly. After all, so the thinking goes, it's their turn. They deserve it. That's sickening.
Number three.
Nashville business leaders are terrified of a proposed state law that would block businesses from imposing across-the-board no-weapons policies for people inside the establishments. Currently, state law allows business owners to post signs prohibiting customers from carrying weapons inside. The new legislation would override that, allowing business patrons with concealed carry or enhanced handgun carry permits to keep their weapons strapped when they walk into a business, starting on July 1st. However, the proposal would allow business owners to confront customers upon personal request and ask them to take their weapons outside. Anyone confronted by a business owner in such a way would be required to remove their firearm or other weapon from the premises. The bill's sponsors argue that the change in law would help prevent future violent attacks by allowing more people to fight back against violent incidents in areas where people typically aren't armed. Acts of mass violence typically occur in gun-free zones, correctly, the bill states. Permitting those authorized to carry a handgun in a concealed manner in locations that are posted as gun-free zones will raise the level of deterrence for those who intend to carry out acts of mass violence. The legislation is currently stalled, by the way, in committees. It probably will not pass in the current session, but it is still a viable option for a future legislative session.
Number four.
New York Attorney General Letitia James may have her sights set now on Donald Trump's Westchester golf course and Seven Springs estate as he struggles to find the $454 million to pay off a judgment in order to enable him to appeal, rather, that judgment against him. Letitia James' team formally registered the judgments in Westchester County, indicating that his properties there are the ones that are going to be in jeopardy first. James' team made the filing on March 6th without providing the name of specific Trump assets or a reason for doing so. Trump's properties there include Trump National Golf Club, Westchester, as well as the 212-acre Seven Spring Estate. Former Judge Andrew Napolitano breaks down just how insane this entire move by Letitia James is. I swear he does. All right, and we've got a tech glitch here. Sometimes this sort of thing just happens. But I'll play that for you coming up a little bit later on with more depth on the case against Donald Trump, or the bogus case against Donald Trump. So let's move on.
Number five.
Kent State University is facing major backlash after a student-run group, Turning Point USA, announced it is inviting Kyle Rittenhouse to speak on campus next month. In 2020, Rittenhouse came into public light after shooting and killing two men at a Black Lives Matter protest in self-defense in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He wounded one other person. Rittenhouse was found not guilty, acquitted of all charges in 2021. At the time of the shooting, he was just 17. Turning Point USA is hosting the event, as noted. It announced Rittenhouse as a speaker on an Instagram post. Since then, a petition has started to ask the organization to cancel Rittenhouse's appearance on campus. But here at Always Right Radio, we are doing the opposite. We are organizing a crew of supporters to rally at a site to be determined where we will all then proceed to the KSU venue, where we will have tickets. I already have mine. I have a number of people who have already told me they have theirs, where we will cheer and support every word that this kid has to say, simply to counter the booing and the attacks, verbal, of course, from the protesters who are still angry that he didn't surrender his life willingly to those who tried to kill him. More details on that are coming up, but by all means, get your registration. We'll tell you how in just a bit.
Number six.
As American Democrats continue to freak out over the collateral damage suffered by supposedly innocent Palestinian civilians in Gaza, as Israel continues its defensive maneuvers against Hamas, a new poll shows there are actually very few innocent Palestinian civilians. In fact, Hamas, its leaders, and the attack on Israel on October 7th remain remarkably popular in Gaza and in the West Bank, even 5 months after the fighting began, in which Palestinians have seen casualties. We'll start with support for the actual 10/7 attack itself, which started the war. Total support for the murder of 1,200 Israelis is almost unchanged at 71% of civilians. But as the survey shows, there's been a change in respondents in the West Bank and those in Gaza. In Gaza, support for the attack has gone up from 57% last December to 71% now. It remains there in the West Bank. Despite the fact that Hamas fighters filmed themselves committing the murders and rapes and the torture of Israeli citizens, including women and children, Palestinians universally agree that only Israel has committed war crimes. As found in the previous poll, almost all Palestinians, 94% of them, think Israel has committed war crimes during the current war. By contrast, only 5% of the Palestinians think Hamas has committed war crimes. Palestinians in Gaza also believe more strongly than they did in December in the last poll that Hamas will win the war. The majority now expects them to win. I'm going to have more on that as the program goes on as well.
Number seven.
Viral video posted yesterday on social media shows we've got a dual number here. Apologies. This is going back to Eagle Pass again. So we're going to pass on this one and move to number eight.
Number eight.
A federal judge ordered the FBI to release the writings, finally, of the transgender mass shooter who killed six people at a Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee, in March of 2023, almost a year ago to the day, March 27th. In the hours after the shooting, Breitbart News noted that Audrey Hale, the shooter, was transgender. Less than a month after the shooting, Breitbart pointed out Hale left behind a suicide note, including 19 journals and other items, all of which have been kept from the public since the day that attack occurred. The exception being a November 2023 leak of 3 pages, purportedly from the shooter's writings. 7 Nashville cops were put on administrative leave over that leak. But U.S. District Judge Alita Trauger has now ordered the release of the writings, writing, quote, "The FBI is ordered to produce ex parte all documents that are potentially responsive to the defendant's FOIA request for in-camera review, with the exception that based on the plaintiff's concessions in this litigation, the FBI need not produce any documents that could not reasonably be construed to bear on Audrey Hale's motives," end quote. You know how this works. A transgender shooter doesn't fit the narrative, so nobody gets to know that she was transgender or he was transgender, and that the motives might have been related to that. Now we will have finally find out. And
number nine.
Speaking of that topic, Democratic Washington Governor Jay Inslee signed a bill into law on Monday mandating that every public school in the state of Washington teach LGBTQ history starting next year. guided by the generalized ideas of DEI, the successful litigation will inject, quote, inclusive learning standards and instructional materials in all public schools, which include governmentally mandated lessons on LGBTQ history. It is presented was presented to the governor's desk on March 8th, signed by Inslee on Monday. The bill obliges all public education leaders in the state to craft curricula that touch on the feats of historically underrecognized figures in American history across the board. Critics call this predatory grooming of captive audiences of other people's children. I am one of those critics. But there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
I appreciate you enduring that. I don't know why we had a repeat on number 8 there, so that was my mistake as I put this show together this morning. But I promise you we have more than just 9 topics to discuss. I welcome your thoughts. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. We'll take a time out here. Don't forget, I've got, about 15 minutes or so? Bernie Moreno, newly elected, not elected, but victorious candidate in the campaign to defeat Sherrod Brown. He won on Tuesday by an overwhelming margin. What does he do next? How does he plan to take down a three-term incumbent like Sherrod Brown? He will join me at 9:35. Stay here on
OpenPolice.org.
Okay, it's 9:25 now. Thanks for being with us on Always Right Radio on this free-for-all Friday. So, one of the top 9 and 9 here was the attempt by Letitia James, the attorney general in New York, to steal all of Donald Trump's property. That's literally what it is. That's not a mistake. That's not hyperbole. That's not exaggeration. That's what this is. Some people still don't know, if they don't follow the news closely enough, exactly what it is that the state of New York alleged that Donald Trump did wrong and why he owes $454 million and why they're trying to confiscate his property. I've played this in the past, but for those who don't know this, and a lot of people ask me, Bob, what the hell are they doing to him again? Judge Andrew Napolitano, I think, has explained it better than anybody has or can. Please know how this works.
Donald Trump borrowed money from Deutsche Bank regularly, consistently, and systematically. It was his, for years, sole lender, and then for other years, his principal lender. And he developed a real estate in New York City and elsewhere. In order to borrow the money, he pledged assets that he already owned as security for the money, giving a mortgage. He paid back all the money that was borrowed, and he paid it back on time. Government came in and demanded his books and records and said, we think that the evaluation you put on a building that you pledged as security for a loan you made 10 years ago was not accurate, that you overvalued the building and therefore you cheated Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank said, well, no, he didn't cheat us. We sent our own appraisers out there to appraise his buildings. We never accept at face value what our clients tell us, except in Trump's case, he was right. It was within a range acceptable to us. It wasn't exactly what we wanted right down to the penny, but it never is, because the value of real estate can change every day. What's the value of a piece of real estate? What a willing buyer and a willing seller are willing to pay for it. And that could be different today than it was last week and will be next week. Nevertheless, the state sued him, claiming that somehow the state suffered harm because Trump over evaluated the assets that he pledged as security for the loan and persuaded a judge that Trump illicitly earned $160 million, and that $160 million plus interest should be forfeited to the state. Now, we have a principle of law in America called the harm principle. If I punch you in the nose, you can sue me because I have a duty not to touch your nose, and I breached that duty and I harmed you and your nose. You can sue for pain and suffering and medical bills and loss of work and permanent injury if there is anybody. But if a friend of yours looks at the nose a week later and says, what happened to your nose? You say, the judge did it to me. Well, I'm going to sue the judge. No, that other person can't sue me because I didn't breach any duty to him. I didn't harm him. So That's effectively what happened here, except there was no nose breaking. There was no harm to the bank. The bank's executives got on the witness stand during the case and said, he paid us back every nickel we loaned him. He's one of the best clients we've had. He's the president of the United States, but if he ever goes back into this business, we'll be happy to lend him all the money he wants. And still the state persuaded a judge that somehow the state was harmed. It was a phantom harm. Now, you're an economist. You'll get a kick out of the state's claim for harm. Here's how we're harmed, the state lawyer argued. The banks loaned Trump more money than they should have. They should have loaned him less money, and therefore there would be more money in the bank for them to loan to other people, to small businesses. A, the bank doesn't lend from its reserves. It lends from the fake cash that the Federal Reserve gives to it. B, Deutsche Bank doesn't lend to small businesses. They don't make loans less than $100 million. C, the state doesn't know what the hell it's talking about because money is fungible. So if the bank overloaned to Trump, he didn't put the money in a shoebox. He's building skyscrapers, which is employing thousands of people, which is creating new wealth each time one of those condos in those skyscrapers is bought and sold and bought and sold. And the judge, without a jury, bought this nonsense, allowed Trump's assets to be seized from him. I'll explain the seizure to you in a minute if you want to hear it.
We do, and we will.
In one of the greatest acts of theft in the modern era. I mean, this would make Joe Stalin blanch for all the farms that his communist government stole from Russian peasants, not wealthy people, peasants in the 1930s.
So, brilliant explanation by Judge Andrew Napolitano. Donald Trump is being raped and robbed in broad daylight in downtown Manhattan. That's what's happening right now. We're going to talk a lot about that this morning. Also, we're going to talk with Bernie Moreno next, right here on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Okay, 9:35. Thanks for sticking with us on AM 1420. The Answer. It's a free-for-all Friday. Appreciate you being part. We'll come back to a little bit more of the analysis on what they are doing to President Trump in New York. It is absolutely criminal. Andrew Napolitano is right. This is straight-up theft. Kevin O'Leary is right. It is not only theft of Donald Trump, but it is much bigger than that now. This is a full-on attack on all Americans, on literally the American way of life, on American businesses, how business is done. This is extraordinarily important. It's gone beyond lawfare now, honestly. They're trying to take his properties, and everything that you just heard from Andrew Napolitano is true. And everything we will share with you coming up is true as well. All right, let's pause for a moment now and get back to what happened in Ohio. What a massive, massive victory it turned out to be on Tuesday in our state, in our primary. This was supposed to be a tight three-way race, or at least tighter at the top two, with maybe a bit of a distant third. And it had been that way for the last 6 months. But on Tuesday, Ohio Republicans came out and voted overwhelmingly to choose Bernie Moreno as their candidate to face Sherrod Brown in the general election, maybe for control or majority of the entire U.S. Senate in November. And joining us now is the man who orchestrated that victory, Bernie Moreno himself. Bernie, thank you for coming back. It's great to have you now as the official Republican nominee for this Senate seat. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Bob. Thank you for having me. And the battle, the real battle now begins, because we have to take out this, as I call him, we got to take out the old commie. And it's going to be a lot, because he's going to have money from every special interest group in the country, union leaders, union bosses, Hollywood, big tech. It's going to be a battle, but we're going to win.
Yeah, well, first let's talk about the victory on Tuesday. Give yourself a chance to take a little bit of a victory lap here. They came at you, Bernie, with everything. And when I say they, I don't know who was specifically behind some of the smear campaigns against you, taking some of your quotes out of context. And a lot of that is just typical politics, taking quotes out of context, context and alleging that you have said things that you did not say. But it was nastier against you than it was against Matt Dolan, than it was against Frank LaRose. You pretty much spent a lot of your campaign money touting your endorsement from President Trump, which clearly carries a lot of weight with a lot of Ohio voters. How does it feel to see that you got more than 50% of the votes despite all of those tactics against you?
Well, not to pick, almost 51% of the vote.
My apologies.
But no, it was 51% of the vote. We got almost 30,000 more votes than Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown was unopposed. We won in all 88 counties. We won by 9 points in Franklin. We won by 9 points in Cuyahoga. We won by 12 points in Hamilton. So it was, we won with over 60% of the vote in the Mahoney Valley. So it was a clear signal. I think what it says, Bob, is that people want to change. I think that's what they want. And that's what I've heard all over Ohio. I think we were never intended to have a political class in this country. And what they want to see is people who've done something in the private sector go to Washington, D.C. to serve and then come home. I think that's the magical ingredient for public service. And overwhelmingly, that's what voters really voted for on Tuesday, in my mind.
So I'm going to ask you one more question about the results from Tuesday before we start looking ahead to what you just pointed out is going to be an extraordinary challenge from Sherrod Brown, because he's going to be very well funded, not only from his own campaign, but from the Democrat Senatorial Committee and so forth. But some people are looking at the turnout, and particularly the number of registered Ohio Republicans, which is around 850,000, 860,000, and the number of votes you got, which was well over a million, or not that you got, but the number of votes that were cast, well over a million, which would indicate that there was a significant crossover, either independents or Democrats taking Republican ballots and voting, presumably given your margin of victory, for you. What do you think of that?
No, I think we had a higher turnout than we did in J.D.'s race in 2022. And I think if you look at the exit surveys, there were about 10% or less that didn't support Trump. So 90% supported President Trump, 10% did not. That tells me actually the crossover was a lot less than in previous elections. We have to fix that, by the way. Let's agree on that. Let's make sure that only Republicans can vote Republican primaries. But, you know, if there was crossover, maybe that affects it a point or two here or there. But it was pretty overwhelming. You got to remember, Bob, going back to the primary, 11 of the 12 counties that endorsed me. And those are your central committee, your strongest party loyalists. So we have the overwhelming support of the Republican Party. The good news is, since Tuesday, every statewide elected Republican has now endorsed me in this race. Franklin Rose put out a very nice statement, which I appreciated a lot. Mm-hmm. He was a gentleman to do that. And as I said back, we honor his military service, his service to the state of Ohio. And we're going to be a fully united party to defeat Sherrod Brown. That's the most important thing. I know our instincts as Republicans is to want to fight and beat each other up. But if we're serious about beating Sherrod Brown, which is control of the United States Senate, the future of the country, the future of the world, it's here in Ohio. We have to be fully united on one mission to defeat Sherrod Brown. And that's what I'm going to do. And that's the entirety of my message to every Republican listening.
Speaking of fully united, I may have missed it. I looked for it and I didn't see it, so maybe I was looking in the wrong places. But have you heard from Matt Dolan?
Matt called me Tuesday night. He was very gracious. He pledged his support. He knows that we have to beat Sherrod Brown. And like I said, I think every single Republican in the state is going to be behind getting rid of Sherrod Brown. It's the most important thing we have to do, because he's the last vestige of the party. Once Sherrod Brown is retired, for all intents and purposes, the Democrat Party in Ohio does not exist, and we can be a strong conservative, constitutional conservative state, and that's what I look forward to. Getting back to normal, by the way, Bob. The media likes to portray this as us as extremists or wacky right wingers. We're the party of common sense, right? No, you come to the country legally, not illegally. We're energy dominant. We're not begging foreign countries for oil. We're going to rebuild our middle class here in America. We're going to make things here, like pharmaceuticals and steel and PPE and semiconductor chips. We're going to have law and order in our cities. We're going to punish criminals. We're going to honor the police. We're not going to indoctrinate our kids. We're going to shrink the size of the federal government. These are all common sense things that most Ohioans support.
Yeah, I agree with that. And by the way, I'm glad to hear that you said about Matt Dolan. I didn't see any public statement from him. So you got a private phone call from him. So it's good to know that he is on board and everybody, will unite who are Republicans in this state to try to take down Sherrod Brown. Now let's look ahead at the challenge of Sherrod Brown. He didn't waste any time immediately attacking you once it became clear that you were going to be the Republican choice here. Listen to this.
Well, the contrast is pretty clear. I mean, my record, as Claire knows, is to reach across the aisle and get things done, whether it was the PACT Act,
whether it was the CHIPS Act, whether it's fighting fentanyl at the border and keeping sanctioning China and Mexico and keeping the stuff off our out of our country and off our streets. And my opponent has always looked out for himself. He's even said he's not going to work with people whom he disagrees with in Washington, which means he's not fighting for Ohio. He's not representing Ohio. And I think the best example of that is even though Ohio strongly, decisively, importantly passed abortion rights constitutional amendment by 13 points last fall, my opponent continues to say that we should have a national abortion ban. No exceptions for rape, no exceptions for life of the mother.
All right, there's a lot in that clip, Bernie. Let's do the last part first. He says he is, of course, pro-choice, and you are an extremist on this because you are saying national abortion ban when you get to the Senate. Is he right?
No, absolutely not. He's, you know, the guy studied Russian studies at Yale. I mean, he's learned really well propaganda. I've never said that. What I've said, Bob, is what I think most Ohioans are, which is let's make it less expensive to raise kids, have kids, make adoption services more available, make sure women have access to good health care, equal access to contraception. And as much as there's some sort of a federal standard, what I would say is abortion, while it would be legal naturally, after 15 weeks, we would just put common sense restrictions so that we don't have elective late-term abortions. But the absolute nut job on this is actually Sherrod Brown. He believes that abortion should be allowed right up at the moment of birth. He believes that for any reason, at any time, whether it's week 35, 36, 37, there should be an abortion. He thinks we should have federal funding for abortion. And he voted against the Infant Border Life Protection Act, which says in a botched abortion, the doctor cannot save the baby's life. That baby needs to die in a cold metal table, according to Sherrod Brown. So he is an absolute left-wing extremist on this issue, and he will spread the propaganda. But isn't it sad that after 50 years of elected office, that's the best he's got? He can't run on his record. He can't say, yeah, I'm pro-worker, because you can't be pro-worker and be pro-illegal immigration. You can't be pro-worker and be pro-Green New Deal. You can't be pro-worker and assault American energy. You can't be pro-worker and yet spend money to the point where you cause generationally high inflation. So this is a guy that cannot have anything that he points to where he's actually helped American workers. I put 455 kids through Cuyahoga Community College at my expense. I pay for that. He only spends our money. He's never spent his own money. I did the same thing at Cleveland State. I've given millions of dollars to people all over Ohio that needed help to give them a hand up. A hand up, not a hand out. And Sherrod Brown has used taxpayer dollars to enrich himself, his family, and special interest groups that fund his campaign. And that's going to be the difference between me and him in this race.
We're talking to Bernie Moreno, Republican candidate for Senate now, officially after his big victory on Tuesday. You know, you're right about everything you just said about things that you should be able to focus on, and that he is focusing on the abortion issue. But I think the reason he's doing that is it's a winning issue for him. It's a winning issue for them. Even though you're right, the extreme nature of, you know, elective late-term abortions, which is what the constitutional amendment that we passed in this state allows, he's in line with Ohioans' thinking. Based on the result of last November, he's right. And if he paints you as being a pro-life extremist, and I think that's a really weird term, because it doesn't make any sense. But if he paints you as being the opponent of choice or the opponent of opportunities for women who are raped, et cetera, to make a decision not to carry the rapist baby, we know all of the arguments, Bernie. But he's got Ohioans' ears because they did what they did in November of last year. It was a 13-point victory for the constitutional amendment to allow abortion all the way up to the moment of birth. That's going to be a hell of an issue for you over the next 5, 6, 7 months.
Well, I think most Ohioans, given the choice, would go along with what I said, which is, you know, let's focus on what happens to that woman to make that decision. Let's make it take away some of the economic issues. So that, again, it's very expensive to have kids right now. I look at my own kids. My 25-year-old son has two dogs, and he looks and say, "Hey, I can't afford kids," and that's the problem because they can't afford houses, they can't afford cars. All that is because of Sherrod Brown's policies. So he's the one leading. His policies are the ones leading to these issues. You know, it used to cost you used to have to make 60 grand to afford a house in Ohio 3 years ago. Today it's 114,000. I mean, Bob, how many kids in their 20s make 114 grand a year? That's an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
And That's all because of Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden's policies. Sherrod Brown's going to have to explain why he's voted with Joe Biden almost 100% of the time. So he may say he's fighting for Ohio, but yet he votes with a guy who's deeply unpopular in Ohio, which is Joe Biden. So he's going to have to figure out how he hides from Biden, but he won't be able to because we have a voting record that shows that he is with Biden virtually 100% of the time. So he does Biden's bidding. He's a guy that is not securing our border. Our border is open because of Joe Biden and Sherrod Brown. We've lost jobs all over Ohio. That's why we won in the Valley. The Valley knows that Sherrod Brown has let him down. Look at the Lordstown plant. That Lordstown plant is empty. All that happened on Sherrod Brown's watch. Now, he can say he spoke out or he sent a letter. That's not what we hire people to go to with D.C. They hire people to get results. He's got no results for working class Americans, and that's what we're going to highlight.
Yeah, well, no, I don't disagree at all, but I know that going back to the abortion part of the conversation, Bernie, I already know what they're going to say. They're going to say, yeah, Bernie Moreno's right. It costs an awful lot to have a baby in this country, which is why you need to let women make the choice as to whether or not they carry through with the pregnancy. They're going to use that. You know, you and I, of course, would say that's right. That's why you have to be more careful before you go and have, you know, unprotected sex. You have to, if it's time to have a baby and you can afford to have a baby, then do it. But if you don't, you know, be smart. But they're going to say, no, we can do it up until the moment of birth because Ohio says so. And Bernie Moreno is not going to be able to pass a national abortion ban that changes that. So they're going to use that against you. And I'm glad to hear you clarify what your true thoughts are on the issue. But I want to go back to the beginning of that clip that I played for you. Where he sounded, Bernie, like a supporter, a conservative Republican supporting the shutting down of the border. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been watching Sherrod Brown for the last 3 years, you know, the 3 years plus now of the Biden presidency, and even going back to his first 15 years or so in office. I don't recall him ever calling for the shutdown of the border. I don't recall him talking about the dangers of fentanyl and the dangers of human traffickers and drug cartel members and so forth controlling that border. I haven't heard a word from him about it. Suddenly he's up for re-election, and now the number one issue on the mind of American voters and Ohio voters, which is illegal immigration, suddenly he's acting like he's a hawk on the border?
Oh, yeah. Well, he called the border crisis, the border invasion, a right-wing conspiracy. He said the wall was a joke. He voted, listen to this one, he voted against a bill that would have prevented counting illegals in the census. So what does that tell you? He may say whatever he's going to say, but in reality, in Washington, D.C., he is a radical open borders liberal. He wants illegal immigrants here because they want disproportionate representation. They had control of the government. And many times during Sherrod Brown's many decades in Washington, D.C., he has done nothing to reform our asylum laws. He's done nothing to fight back against the drug cartels. This guy has enabled the far-left policies to go through and basically voted for all of that, and now he's trying to change the script here in Ohio. We're not going to let him, Bob, because we're going to have the resources to expose the real Sherrod Brown, and I believe we're going to not only beat him, but I think we're going to absolutely crush him in the same way that we won on Tuesday. I'm very confident of that. People see him for what he is. He's an old, tired relic that all he does is talk. There's the deeds all hurt Ohio. His words are meaningless. This is a guy whose time has long passed.
Bernie, I know you've got a 10 o'clock, so I'll wrap with this question. You mentioned resources. The last guy to take on Sherrod Brown was Jim Renacci, and I talked to him yesterday, and he complained, he correctly pointed out that the Republican senatorial campaign or finance committee did not come through with the funds to take on Sherrod Brown. What is your understanding of what you're going to get from them in this race?
Well, they've already committed to over $80 million in TV, so that we're going to have a lot of resources. The entirety of the Republican Party nationally and in Ohio understands how important this race is. I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. I met with the leader. I met with the groups that I need to meet with. I met with almost the entirety of the Republican caucus. This is one team, one fight, fully united to take back the United States Senate. We will not lack for resources, but we need everybody's help. Everybody's got to do their part. So this is, of course, the pitch. If you're listening, go on BernieMoreno.com. But in $5, $10, $15, whatever you can do, because Sherrod Brown will have enormous resources we got to be able to keep up. So any help from the people listening, go on BernieMoreno.com.
Very good. Bernie Moreno, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Enjoy the victory from Tuesday, but I know you're hard at work looking at November. And, of course, we will stay in touch with you the entire way. Thank you, Bernie.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You got it. There's Bernie Moreno. He's that's good to hear, by the way. I don't know exactly how that works. I don't know how that compares to other races. I don't know how that compares to previous campaigns. Like I said, I talked to Jim Renacci yesterday, and in his 2018 run against Sherrod Brown, you know, he said the Republican Senate Finance Committee or whatever it's called did not come through. They didn't come to Ohio with a lot of money. They didn't feel like maybe this was a winnable race at that time. And so they didn't want to throw good money after bad, or I don't know what their reason was, especially considering the fact that it was President Trump who recruited Renacci to drop his governor's bid and run for the Senate. But they did what they did. So I don't know exactly how this $80 million TV pledge from that committee compares to that one or to other races. But I do know this. Most political observers, including and especially Republicans, see precious few opportunities to turn blue Senate seats into red ones and flip their little slim majority of 51-49 Democrat to 51-49 Republican. Maybe, you know, in a perfect world, maybe 52-48, but probably not. There are precious few seats that are considered to be vulnerable from Democrats. This is one of them. Sherrod Brown is vulnerable. Ohio is a red state. Bernie Moreno just won a very decisive victory in the primary. Donald Trump won Ohio twice by 8-plus points. Add all of those things up. Ohio's strong tilt toward the red. Donald Trump's popularity in this state. People are going to have massive turnouts to vote for Trump this time around. Not that they didn't last time, but I think maybe even more so because what did we say yesterday? Who did I talk to yesterday about this? Boy, I'm going to smack myself once I figure out who it was. But it was a repeated line from others who have pointed out we have to make this election too overwhelming to steal, that if it's allowed to remain close, it can be stolen. So this election needs to be beyond, you know, theft level. It's got to be so overwhelming. And in Ohio, 8 points was already overwhelming. It needs to be bigger. Point being, if Ohio, which is a red state now, and if Ohio filled with super strong Trump support comes out in massive numbers, they're going to then go down ballot and go right to Bernie Moreno and bounce Sherrod Brown right out of Washington. It can happen. This is a vulnerable seat. This is a winnable seat. And I think the Senate Finance Committee knows that, and I think the RNC knows that, and they will give Bernie whatever resources they need to expose Sherrod Brown for the fraud that he is. And by the way, to that question that I just asked Bernie, you can answer it yourself. When is the last time you turned on a radio or a television or opened up a newspaper, and I don't know if anybody even still opens up the Plain Dealer anymore, but and saw anything or heard anything from Sherrod Brown being critical of Joe Biden's border policies? Name me one time in the 3 years that Biden has been president, and you can go to all eight of Obama's, when did you ever hear him criticize Democrat open border policies? The answer is never. I have never seen nor read one single word or heard one single word from Sherrod Brown being critical of Biden's open borders. Never did he say that we have to stop it. Well, we've got to, you know, we've got to keep this control of illegal immigrants or even calling them undocumented workers or asylum seekers. We got to stop this. Nothing until election year. Suddenly it's, oh, well, I look at the polls. I see the American people have chosen illegal immigration as their number one issue in this election season. So what am I going to have to do? I'm going to have to go out there and pretend to be opposed to illegal immigration. But what has he done and said in his entire political career? Nothing about that. And in the last 3 years in particular, did he ever once speak out against Joe Biden's policies on the border? Nothing. Zero. Know that as we get into this general election season fight. To bounce him from D.C. and make sure Bernie Moreno helps us get a Republican majority in the United States Senate. All right. As noted in the open, Bernie Moreno was our only conversation scheduled for today. That means the next 2 hours are free. That means they are free for all. free for your phone calls. You pick the topic. You want to talk about this race? You want to talk about anything we covered in the top 9 and 9, the Trump campaign, the Trump lawsuit against Trump, rather, trying to take his properties. All of it is up for grabs. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. It's Always Right Radio on AM 14.
That's willyouseeonevet.org.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
Okay, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, that means hour number two has commenced on this free-for-all Friday, the 22nd morning of the third month in the year of our Lord, 2024. So I'm going to get back into what they're doing to President Trump here in a moment. But literal breaking news here that I want to discuss because it directly impacts me, involving Candace Owens, The Daily Wire, and Rabbi Michael Barclay. And Seth can join me for this because Seth books my show for Strictly Speaking. Well, he books this show, but he also books Strictly Speaking, the TV show that I do for True Blue. And we were scheduled to record this afternoon for an episode to air next week, Rabbi Michael Barclay. If you don't know anything about Michael Barclay, you should. You should have heard him here. But he was going to do a TV show for us, a deep, deep, deep dive into the Israel Hamas war in Gaza. And we were going to most certainly talk about the viewpoint of certain Americans as it relates to that. President Trump, of course, is in the middle of the news right now because he made a statement a couple of days ago in which he said Jewish Democrats in America should be ashamed of themselves because they shouldn't be voting for Democrats. Democrats don't care about them. Democrats don't care about Israel. Democrats are Democrats are anti-Zionists. And it's shameful, he said, for Jews, American Jews, to vote for Democrats. And that, of course, led to calls of Trump being anti-Semitic, which is just stupid. But people who do not support Israel's right to defend itself in this conflict against Hamas, whether they're in the Middle East or they're here, people who think Israel does not have the right to defend itself, defend themselves, they are by definition anti-Semitic. Well, Candace Owens, the extraordinarily popular conservative commentator and pundit and Daily Wire contributor, Candace Owens has been among those who hasn't said Israel shouldn't defend itself, but has been very, very much equivocating on the issue, suggesting and drawing some parallels between what the Hamas savages did to Israeli women and children in Israel on October 7th to the deaths being suffered by children, Palestinian children, in Gaza right now as a result of the Israeli response. So she's kind of basically said they're the same. According to many critics, including Rabbi Barclay, that's anti-Semitism on display because they're not the same. There's not a moral equivalency between intentional raping and torturing and killing of children in Israel on October 7th and collateral damage done as Israel defends itself in highly populated Gaza areas where Hamas terrorists hide amongst children. They hide amongst women and children and civilians throughout all of Gaza. So that when Israel comes, the IDF forces come for Hamas, sometimes the collateral damage happens that the civilians are killed at the same time. And if children are killed accidentally by IDF forces who are trying to kill Hamas terrorists, that is not an equivalency to the death of Israeli women and children intentionally by those terrorists on 10/7, right? I think that's fair. I think most people would agree with that. Rabbi Barclay is among those who said that's not it. Those are not equal. These are not, they're not even able to be compared because intent matters. So Rabbi Barclay wrote an article or two about Candace Owens, calling her an anti-Semitic bigot because of her kind of equivocation on the issue. Candace, in response, had Rabbi Barclay on her podcast, and the two of them went kind of toe-to-toe about all of the things that the rabbi said compared to all of the things that Candace Owens said. I listened to it, and I can tell you it didn't go great. There were points where they were very agreeable, and there were points where they were very respectful of one another's opinions, but at the end it kind of devolved into she completely, you know, absolves herself of any anti-Semitic intention, and he said, no, you were anti-Semitic, whether you felt like you were or not, because, and here's why. So it got a little bit ugly. Literally just 13 minutes ago, I saw this headline. Actually, I didn't see it. Seth told me about it, so I looked it up. Candace Owens has been fired by the Daily Wire. Quote, Daily Wire and Candace Owens have ended their relationship, end quote. That was from Daily Wire CEO Jeremy Boring. He did not elaborate on the circumstances behind the move, but the fact that this is happening right as the Rabbi Barclay, Candace Owens feud, dispute, whatever you want to call it, reached a fever pitch, it would indicate that this ending of the relationship at the Daily Wire is related. Now, how does that involve me? Well, Rabbi Barclay, as I said, I was about to record a deep dive interview into all of this with him this afternoon. And Seth, he just called you?
Yes, he did. One, I had spent maybe a half hour, 45 minutes on the phone with him the other day talking about this Candace Owens situation where he explained everything that happened. He just called me and he canceled for today's filming.
And what reason did he give?
Candace Owens got fired and he is already receiving death threats from Candace Owens supporters. And he is afraid for himself and for his family. And thought that it would probably be better to not do this today.
That is extraordinary. And I'll tell you why it's extraordinary. Well, a couple of reasons why. One, just the story in and of itself is wild and terribly unfortunate and completely something I think that was avoidable. But it's also really, really disturbing to me because if Candace Owens supporters are making death threats to Rabbi Barclay, these are conservatives. Candace Owens is a strong conservative woman. She makes no bones about it. She pulls no punches. She is very much, and she's a former Democrat like many of us in her younger years. She was a liberal Democrat. She was red-pilled and so on and so forth, and she is one of the leading voices in the conservative movement, which means that her fans are also like-minded. And if her fans are making death threats to Rabbi Barclay, those are typically the actions of the left. You know what I mean, Seth? It's Antifa, yeah. And it is the BLA. It is the radical extremist leftists who care nothing about life that make death threats to people because of things that somebody said. And the fact that Candace fans are threatening Rabbi Barclay, if that's really going on, and I have no reason to doubt the rabbi, that's troubling.
Yeah, I have no reason to doubt him either. I mean, I talked to him earlier today, and he was ready to go for the show. But so this actually happened, and you know, he is receiving threats, and he is seriously concerned about his family, and I completely understand that.
It is scary,
like you said, because you know that these are not Democrats. These are not liberals out there that are getting mad. These
right.
are Candace Owens fans,
right.
who are people like me. I was a fan before I heard all this.
Now, there is one more element to it that I would have to bring up here, is that if they're Candace Owens fans just generally, who are mad that she's been booted by Daily Wire, or maybe it was on equal terms. Again, Jeremy Boring's statement just said they've ended their relationship. It doesn't say firing. It doesn't say resign. So maybe it was mutual. I don't know. But if they're just general Candace fans, then I'm troubled by it for the reasons I just said, conservatives. However, it might also be that there are anti-Semitic people who are supportive of Candace Owens calling for a ceasefire, which is pretty much what Candace's viewpoint has been in this whole thing, calling for a ceasefire the way, you know, Sharia Tlaib and Jihad Omar and Pramila Jayapal and all of the other Hamas squad members in Congress, they're all screaming for a ceasefire because of the Palestinian children and what they call innocent Palestinian civilians being collaterally damaged in all of this. that's kind of Candace's point of view, too. She's worried about them. So, you know, and people have called her anti-Semitic. Rabbi Barclay has called her anti-Semitic for that reason. So it may be a whole bunch of anti-Semites making, you know, death threats against Rabbi Barclay, which would, of course, be on brand. Anti-Semites who hate Jews and who, you know, simply do not want Israel to exist and believe in from the river to the sea, blah, 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 targeting a very, very popular and well-known rabbi would certainly be on brand, right?
I totally agree. And it's sad that we're at that point in this country where people are threatening a good man's life over the stuff. It's ridiculous. But absolutely, you're correct.
You know, and I'm going to say this, too, because I try as hard as I possibly can to be fair about everything. Even if it turns out that I'm completely against one side, it's because I have evaluated the situation, and based on fairness, this is accurate. So in my attempt to be fair on this, too, I listened to that podcast and that conversation between Candace and Rabbi, and I think each of them had points that I agreed with. I think the rabbi read into some of Candace's comments and read them as anti-Semitic and believed they were. And I listened to her explanation, and I listened to her playing back her direct quotes in an interview she did with Tucker Carlson. And I don't believe she was being anti-Semitic in some of those quotes. And I think Rabbi Barclay went too far in his condemnation of her as an anti-Semitic bigot. I was going to tell him that today. But on the other hand, I also agreed with him on a number of things that were things that she said, trying to draw that moral equivalency between the death of some Palestinian civilians and the death of the Israelis who were targeted specifically by Hamas. I think he was spot on. So I think they both had good points, and they both had bad points, quite frankly, in this little, you know, battle of theirs. And so I'm very disappointed for both of them. I'm disappointed that Candace Owens has been relieved. I mean, she'll find another outlet, obviously. Maybe she'll start her own. She's got enormous popularity and enormous wealth. She could probably do her own thing. But the fact that she's been relieved of her duties or parted ways or whatever with the Daily Wire makes me sad for her. And the fact that Rabbi Barclay now can't do a taping like my show today because he's getting death threats is even more over the top.
I did get an email from him just now, actually.
What's it say?
Apologizing, and hopefully we can speak after appropriate safety precautions are fully in place and authorities have dealt with some of these dangers. So.
Okay. Well, we will obviously endeavor to get that booked and to talk to him. I really, really wish that this parting of the ways happened tomorrow instead of today, because then we could have had our conversation today and would have been fine to air it next week. But I feel bad for everybody involved in this terrible situation. All right, so that's just a little bit of a breaking news story that just happened during our top of the hour news. Candace Owens has been relieved of her duties, or has been shown the door, or what have you, or maybe headed for the exit intentionally from the Daily Wire. And for those who don't know, by the way, the start of all of this, Seth, I should probably bring up her first clash with a prominent Jew in this issue over Israel and Hamas wasn't with Rabbi Barclay. It was with Ben Shapiro, who owns the Daily Wire. Or no, doesn't own. I'm sorry. He's part owner, I guess, because Jeremy Boring is the CEO and part owner, and I guess Ben Shapiro's part owner. But anyway, her first clash was with Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro heard some of her remarks and in a speech really, really slammed her. And she responded to that with, you know, defending herself and slamming Ben Shapiro and, you know, for allegedly misrepresenting her viewpoint on this. So she had a battle with Ben Shapiro of Daily Wire first. Then things kind of cooled and calmed a little bit over the course of, I mean, what's it been, 6 months now, 5 months now or whatever since October 7th? So things have cooled a little bit, I think, or I thought, until now here comes the Rabbi Barclay clash. So Candace has had some real run-ins with some of the real strong pro-Israel, pro-Zionist, pro-Jew, you know, leaders in the Jewish community.
And Rabbi Barclay has not been silent about any of this stuff. He's been very vocal. He's done numerous shows. Even someone on this network I've heard, where he has not been silent about his opinions of Candace. So
No, he has not. And again, I think what drew her attention was an article that he wrote. I think it ran in PJ Media. That's headline was, Candace Owens is an anti-Semitic bigot. That was the headline. And then he spent the article talking about things that Candace said in the interview with Tucker Carlson, and maybe also in the interview or in the response to Ben Shapiro, that he found to be anti-Semitic. And again, being 100% fair here, I listened, and she played it back for him, unedited, the interview, part of the interview with Tucker, and I did not feel she was being anti-Semitic in those remarks. I disagreed with her, but I did not think that it was anti-Semitic in nature, and I thought the rabbi went way too hard by saying she's an anti-Semitic bigot. And I would have told the rabbi that today in a respectful tone, and because I want to get to the bottom of this, and I want everybody to be, you know, on the same page here, that we all condemn what Hamas did. We all defend Israel's right to exist. And, you know, and again, and yeah, I would have to say we have to convince people like Candace that there is no moral equivalency. If, you know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again now, and it's going to sound barbaric, and it's going to sound very, very bad, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's the truth, and I'm not going to lie to you. If a home invader in my home has a gun pointed at my child, and he himself is holding his own child, I will shoot through that child to kill him if it protects mine. If he's going to literally hide behind his child thinking it will save him as he ends my child's life, he's wrong. I will defend my child if I have to shoot through his to kill him. That is the more accurate depiction of what's going on in Gaza right now. Hamas came for Israeli children and women and killed them and tortured them and ended their lives in the most barbaric of ways, and then proceeded to hide behind Palestinian children and Palestinian women and Palestinian elderly civilians when the IDF came for them. And if those women and children and elderly civilians were killed in the process of Israeli soldiers defending themselves against the Hamas terrorists who just did what they did to their families, and they have pledged to do it again. That part matters, by the way. Hamas leaders in the months since October 7th have said there will be an October 8th and an October 9th and an October 10th. In other words, we're going to keep doing this again and again and again until what? Until from the river to the sea, Palestine is free. Until all Jews are dead or abandon that land. So the IDF forces, Benjamin Netanyahu's military, they're doing exactly what I would do. If you are threatening to kill my kid, and if I, in order to protect my kid's life, I have to kill yours to get to you, consider it done. That's happening. Candace can't understand that. And I side with the rabbi in the big picture on that issue. And I hope to tell him that. And please make sure, Seth, in your next communication with Rabbi Barkley, that he knows that. That when he talks to me, that will be the position that I take. While I will not agree with everything he said about Candace, I will indeed agree with his position on Israel's right to defend itself. Because that's what this is all about. All right, that was a lot more than I thought it would be. The phone lines are full. If you're on hold, stay there. I'll come right to you. If you're not on hold, well, we'll have to wait till some get cleared, and then you can get on hold, and we'll take your calls. You want to talk about this? You want to talk about the election? You know the drill. It's called Free for All Friday. You decide. We'll be
on all of your options.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France. On AM 1420, The Answer.
Yes, it is. And it is hour number three. Good morning once again. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Friday, a free-for-all Friday, 22nd morning of the third month, year of our Lord, 2024. If you just tuned in, you missed a lot in the last hour, an awful lot. You really want to go back after the show, about an hour after the show ends, the podcast will be available, and you'll be able to catch up on what's going on with Candace Owens, with the Daily Wire. She is gone, by the way, now, in case you are following that. Rabbi Michael Barclay, who had this very, very public feud with Candace Owens over her comments about October 7th and Israel and Gaza and civilians. You know what's funny? The reason it's all very important to me is I was scheduled to interview Rabbi Barclay about all of that today. He canceled because he is getting death threats, a lot of death threats, from Candace Owens supporters and what he believes to be a lot of anti-Semites, dangerous ones, because of the public feud that he has had with Candace over this. In fact, I'll read this to you as the email came from Rabbi Barclay to us, to Seth and myself and others on our team at True Blue for the interview we were going to do. He said, as much as I would love to speak with you all, the news of this morning is creating physical threats and dangers to my family from the cult-like audience of Candace Owens. And for the sake of my safety for my family, I need to postpone being on the show. She is trying to portray her firing from Daily Wire as the result of my interview with her, and her Nick Fuentes-type audience is dangerous. I apologize. Hopefully we can speak after appropriate safety precautions are fully in place and authorities have dealt with some of these dangers. Signed, Rabbi Michael Barclay. So it's interesting that all this is happening today because just 2 days ago I interviewed Dennis Prager for Strictly Speaking, my television show. And Dennis and I talk about Israel a lot and about a lot of other things, too, involved with his career, the Rational Bible. But current events-wise, we talked a lot about Israel because this is what Dennis talks about as well. And you're going to hear that episode next week. But the follow-up with Rabbi Barclay today was going to be very explosive. So now we're just going to have to wait and see where that goes. To the point, though, that the previous caller made, and we're talking about the Hamas being the greatest, having the best construction contract in the world because they get to rebuild all of the stuff that they destroy by way of attacking Israel and Israel's responses and so forth. Not just there, by the way, but around the Middle East. But it's interesting because we were talking about the collateral damage, and this is what we're talking about with respect to the Candace Owens and Rabbi Barclay feud. Candace is overly concerned, and so are a lot of other people, with the number of civilian deaths in Gaza as the IDF continues their, you know, their defensive campaign against what Hamas did to them and is planning to do to them again. And I'm here to say, I won't say it with conviction when I say there are no innocent civilians. That's said with somewhat equivocation, because little children don't know what's going on around them. They are truly innocent. But the death of innocent children in a case like this, the death, the responsibility for the death must be laid at the feet of those who have brought it on, not those who actually did the action. In other words, the death of Palestinian children is on the hands, or at the feet, if you will, of Hamas and the adult civilians who call themselves Palestinians who live in Gaza. Because they're the ones who brought this on. They're the ones who forced the IDF into coming after Hamas to stop them from raping and torturing and killing Israeli children. So the civilians, the adult civilians in Gaza, I will say with conviction, there are no innocent civilians. The kids are where I equivocate. But the adults, there are no. And as evidence of this, I gave this briefly in the Top 9 at 9 this morning. There is a new survey that has been done, a new poll of adults in Gaza, talking about the Palestinians. And the new poll that was just released on Wednesday shows that the Palestinian civilians that we're all supposed to be so sad about that are dying as this campaign goes on, they support the terrorists. That's why I say with conviction there are no innocent civilians among the adult population. 5 months after the fighting began, let's update you as to where things are. In your view, was Hamas's decision to launch its offensive against Israel on 7 October a correct or an incorrect decision? In December of 2023, 72%, so in other words, just 2 months after it, 72% of the respondents in Gaza, these are Palestinian civilians, said, yes, correct decision. They did what they should have done. Now, 5 months later, including after all of the collateral damage, the civilian deaths, 71% still say it was the right thing to do. But as the survey shows, there is a change between respondents that are directly in Gaza and those that are on the other side in the West Bank. In Gaza, support for the attack has gone up from 57% last December to 71% now. In other words, the Gaza civilians, who are the ones who are supposedly were supposed to feel bad for because they're being killed as collateral damage, they support what happened on October 7th now more than they did then. So who's Israel supposed to make peace with? Who are they supposed to agree to a ceasefire with? Hamas is still trying to kill them, and the Palestinian civilians, who are Hamas, who support Hamas, who make up Hamas, who allow Hamas to hide amongst their population, they agree that we should have done it. Who are we supposed to make peace with? Who are the Israelis? Who's Benjamin Netanyahu? As Antony Blinken and Joe Biden and John Kirby all continue, and Chuck Schumer try to tell Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire, all because it will help them politically in the United States in this November's election. They're telling them to have a ceasefire and come to a peace agreement. With whom? Virtually the entire population of Palestinians in Gaza and most in the West Bank agree with Hamas and want Israel destroyed. How can we possibly do anything but support Israel doing exactly what they're doing? Hamas fighters filmed themselves committing murders of Israeli citizens, including women and children that they raped to death, tortured to death. They filmed themselves on the phones of the actual Israeli victims and then sent those videos to contacts on the Israeli victims' phones, which means their family members. So their last images of their loved ones were watching them being tortured, raped, and killed. And the Palestinian civilians almost universally agreed that this is what should have been done. How can you feel sorry for the Palestinians? The only people I think that you can even feel remotely sorry for here are the young children who didn't do any of this. But their deaths and any suffering that they're enduring is the responsibility of the aggressive party. In this case, Hamas and the Palestinian civilians. Look, the West Bank is filled with two things. Hamas and future members of Hamas. Understand that. That's it. They support Hamas and what they did to Israel. The statistics, the polling, the surveys show it. There are no innocent civilians. None. With the exception of those babies. And those babies who don't know any better are being killed, not by Israel, but by Hamas. Sorry, I'm just going to be direct about this. And Rabbi Barclay is right about that. Candace is wrong about that. That doesn't mean she's an anti-Semite, which is what this battle was over, but she was wrong. Okay, we're going to go to Tanya. Tanya in Akron wants to hit this story. Go ahead, Tanya, you're on the air. All right, not hearing Tanya. Okay, let's try Rick in Elyria. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, Rick. Bob.
Okay, Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I actually called about was in regards to Donald Trump. But I will say this much. What God said to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And he said that in regards to his Abraham's son, Isaac, not his illegitimate, well, you know, Ishmael. And the Jews are God's chosen people, and they are the ones that are, you know, you put your you know, put your faith and trust in God, and you know, He'll take care of them.
Well, it's it's one of the reasons why they're the most targeted people on the face of the earth, too, because a lot of other people hate the idea that the Jews are the chosen people of God, because God, of course, loves all of the people He created. But when they hear the words chosen and they read the Bible and that aspect of the Old Testament, it angers a lot of them. And I think that's part of the sad reality.
And that's true.
Yeah.
But what I call about in regards to, not as serious, but it is serious, after Monday, if Donald Trump doesn't come up with the bond money, and you know that New York money grabbers are going to go to the lowest amount of money value-wise on his property, if it doesn't add up to $500 million, will they be able to go outside of New York, the state of New York, and claim property outside of New York?
So the question is, what would they be able to claim any of his property outside of New York? I think so, because they're basically, if he put up property at Mar-a-Lago, for example, up as or in New Jersey, you know, which of course Westchester is. Bedminster. If he puts up properties that are outside as securities to pay back a loan, you know, as collateral for taking out one of these massive loans from Deutsche Bank, and they said he overvalued those as a way of getting those loans, then yes, they can target those for seizure as well.
Although I think it was what they're doing is totally wrong.
It is.
That was my question. Thanks a lot, Bob.
It is. You bet, Rick. Thanks for the call. That's part of the problem. If it was only, and by the way, I shouldn't even say only, because, you know, 40 Wall Street, Trump Tower, you know, the monumental New York skyline would not be what it is if it were not for Donald Trump. Obviously, it doesn't mean there wouldn't be skyscrapers, but his contributions to it would not be there, and they are literally trying to take those from him, all because they hate him so much, all because they don't want him to be president. They want to bankrupt him. They think that, obviously, if he does have to file Chapter 7, it will kill him politically, or Chapter 11 or Chapter 13 or any of the others, that if he has is unable to pay this and they seize his properties and he tries to file for bankruptcy to protect his properties, it will kill him politically. That's all they're trying to do. It's so wrong. Lisa is in Medina, at Medina County Friends and Neighbors, I'm guessing. Lisa, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you and all the listeners. What an exciting post-primary time we have now.
It is indeed. Well, it's exciting for Ohio because now we have our Senate candidate, and we've got some congressional races decided as far as, you know, the primaries go. But boy, less than exciting right now with what's going on nationally, and that's what they're doing to President Trump is it's casting a pall, I think, over the entire thing right now.
Yeah, that is horrible.
Yes, indeed. So what's coming up? What's coming up at McFan tomorrow?
So tomorrow we have Jack Windsor will be speaking at 9 a.m. at the Thirsty Cowboy. He'll be giving us his post-primary information, which is very important. Our guests need to become better informed voters, and this will energize everyone, because you know Jack is digging up new information and insights on what happened this week on Tuesday. And we're really looking forward to hearing from him. Jack spoke at McFan back in 2020, and I'll never forget it because things were so weird. Remember, everything was shutting down. We could barely have a meeting at the Copper Top, and they were forcing everyone to wear masks. And that's when we had Jack for the first time, and it was an outstanding, the folks that came. I mean, there was a lot of people showed up. We had a full house there, and I hope we will tomorrow, too, and welcome him back, because he has really energized folks, engaged them, and informed us so that we know what's going on. He does incredible work, and I'm so glad that you work with him as much as you do.
Yeah.
We just love to hear him on your show.
Well, listen, Jack, first of all, Jack is a great public speaker, you're right, and it'll be a great event tomorrow, I have no doubt of that. But what Jack did, which is so important, which is how, as he describes it, he kind of blew up in 2020, you know, from a standpoint of his visibility. What he did is he gave a voice to people who didn't have a voice. He asked questions, demanded answers from Mike DeWine and from Amy Acton that nobody else dared ask. Well, nobody else in the press corps, which was just dutifully hanging on every word that the walking, mumbling, bumbling lab coat wanted to say and what the little Napoleonic Mike DeWine wanted to say, they were all just like, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, we'll do whatever you say. The people who opposed that and who wanted freedom didn't have access to them. Jack was our access. Jack got himself a press pass from a TV station to go cover those press conferences down in Mansfield. And then when they pulled that, we gave him a press pass from WHK because we are an accredited news organization and made sure that he could continue to ask those questions. He was our voice. He said things to Amy Acton that we wanted to say. He said things to Mike DeWine that we wanted to say. And watching them stumble and mumble and trying to respond to it because he was spot on about virtually every decision they made, that was enormous. So I think the whole state owes a debt of gratitude to him for that. And so I think people should absolutely come out and listen to him.
Indeed. I'll never forget watching and listening to him ask those tough questions. And I would just giggle with delight because it was what we all were thinking and what we all wanted to hear someone say. And Jack gave us that voice. He was incredible and still is.
Listening to DeWine tap dance because he couldn't respond. That to me was even more entertaining than the questions because he had them and DeWine wanted nothing to do with any pushback whatsoever. And Jack pushed back for us. And that's enormous. So 9 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Thirsty Cowboy, right?
Indeed. 9 o'clock, Thirsty Cowboy 71 and Route 18. Please join us.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you, Lisa. We're going to go down to Akron and talk to Larry next. Larry, you're on the air. Fire away.
Good morning, Bob. A couple things I want to get off my chest.
Okay.
One is I've never heard the politician, when they're talking about bills or whatever that they want to propose or pass, never mentioned that this is going to affect them, their children, grandchildren, aunts, uncles, any relatives. They just said, this is what we want to do, or this is what we want to pass. Secondly, if I wasn't a disabled veteran from Vietnam, I would volunteer to go over to Israel and help the IDF. Thirdly, I will be sending $100 today to Donald Trump to help defray his fine.
Wow.
That's the best I could do.
Well, you know what? You are a patriot, Larry. God bless you. And for all three of those things, seriously, I don't think they would allow you to join the IDF with them. They don't allow foreigners to be a part of their military. But I know they would appreciate the support, and I know I do too. And what you just said is so important. You know, it doesn't even have to be $100 if everybody chipped in. If everybody voted for Trump, like I said, gave $5 or $10, he would have more than enough to cover this and then be able to fight back and continue to fight for us this November. Because he's our last hope. He's our last hope. And if they stop him from being able to fight for us, if they bankrupt him, if they end his campaign with all of this lawfare and all of these ridiculous lawsuits, we're all sunk. So we owe it. We wouldn't even be donating it to Donald Trump, per se, as donating it to ourselves and making sure that our fighter is still there. So the fact that you're willing to send $100 is amazing. And I hope more and more people get around to that.
Yeah, I hope it arrives in time.
Amen. I hope people will do the same thing, and that it arrives in time, and that more people will join that effort. Larry, thank you for the call, my friend. God bless you. I appreciate it. By the way, quick note here, Seth, you got this note from Rabbi Barkley about or is this a separate issue about the Trump's Truth Social?
No, I sent that as a separate issue.
Separate issue, okay. I thought maybe the rabbi sent that to you because you've been in contact with the rabbi. Okay, so separately then, and I did see this in the news over the last couple of weeks. We've mentioned it in passing, but Truth Social is about to go public. Truth Social is Trump's personally owned. He owns, like, how many shares did you say, Seth?
Approximately 78 million.
78 million shares are owned by President Trump himself of his very popular social media platform. So this is, of course, why he does not go on Twitter anymore, doesn't go on Facebook, doesn't go anywhere except for Truth Social. And if you want to communicate with and follow President Trump, you go on there as well, where so many people have gone on to Truth Social that they're about to take this company public and make it publicly traded. And when they do, Donald Trump stands to earn somewhere between $4 and $5 billion personally for his 78,000 shares that would then be made public for trading. Right, Seth?
78 million shares.
Yeah. 78 million. Sorry.
Yeah, it said $3 to $5 billion.
$3 to $5 billion. Okay, so I went with four. So $3 to $5 billion is what he stands, and this could go public as early as next week.
That's what the article says. Yes.
Okay. Well, he's on a deadline here. Obviously, getting the money for his appeal of this ridiculous judgment in New York in that case, in that valuation case. So I hope that this can be done Monday. And hopefully then that fund, those funds can become liquid and available to him so that he can make that $454 million, you know, cash payment, if you will. And it's not a payment, he has to pay it, but he has to put it up front in order to be able to appeal the ridiculous decisions against him. So that's the good news. Maybe it won't be up to us to send that money after all if this does come forth in time. So that's just another element of it. If you want to send money to Mar-a-Lago, you can do that. If you want to find one of the many Give, Send, Go campaigns for President Trump, because, again, you'd be contributing to yourself, not to him, because this is for everybody. You can do that way, but you can also, and we'll continue to follow this story, find out exactly whether or not some of those publicly traded shares, maybe you want to buy those in Truth Social. I'm not an investor. I'm not an expert in that. That's why I rely on Dave Mortosh to handle my money for me. But I'll tell you what, I might be looking at buying a little bit of Truth Social when that does go public, because I think it is only going to grow.
Well, and the answer.
All right, 11:34, final segment of the hour, final segment of the show, final segment actually of the week. What do you say we make a count, get a few more good phone calls in? I got a little bit more audio to share with you. And I also want to share with you what I did yesterday. It's growing. The number of people that have contacted me privately via email, text messages, and then some publicly on my social media, we're going to put a very strong contingent together for April 16th. And I want to make it as strong as possible. From my conversation yesterday with the president of the Turning Point USA chapter at Kent State University, the venue where Kyle Rittenhouse is coming to speak on April 16th is only 400 seats large. It's a venue with a capacity of 400, so it's not many. That means the reservations or tickets are going to go very quickly. So I want you to do this now. Go to my Facebook page. Go to my Facebook page, which is Always Right Radio. You will see a link there to the registration form for tickets to go, and it's free, by the way, to get your ticket. This isn't a charge. It's just more of a registration. But to go and hear Kyle Rittenhouse's speech on the 16th. That's a Tuesday, I think, isn't it, Seth? I think it's a Tuesday. Yeah, so it's on a Tuesday, and he's going to be speaking at Kent State, and you need to register to be with us. What I'm going to do is I'm going to announce the week before April 16th, what location we will meet at. And we're going to meet together, and we're all going to walk together to the venue, and we are going to cheer our fool heads off. We are going to cheer and support this young man and everything that he says, particularly every time the protesters there try to shout him down, call him a racist, call him a murderer, and do everything else that they've done to make this kid's life miserable for his terrible crime of not wanting to be murdered. He fired in Kenosha, Wisconsin, to save his life as they were attacking him and about to beat him to death, for crying out loud. They wanted him to take his murder in a good stride, and he didn't. And in fact, he defended himself. And now they're going to try to make his life that he saved miserable. And I'm telling you, I'm not going to stand by and watch it. I'm going to support him. They're going to try to do everything they can to keep you and me out, but we are going to have registrations. I have mine on my phone already. I registered yesterday. I've got the QR code right there. So when I show up at the door, they're going to scan my code, and I'm going to have a spot. We're going to get there early enough to make sure that we get spots, because if we don't, the protesters are going to crowd it out, And I doubt very seriously they're only going to have 400 QR codes and registrations that they give out. There probably will be more, but that it will be on a first-come, first-served basis. And they're going to crowd it out. And I'm telling you, we are going to crowd them out. We are going to be there early. We are going to be there, and we're going to be vocal. And we're going to wear every patriotic thing that we can find. And we are going to cheer for him. We are not going to be violent. We are not going to be physical. We are not going to be harassing. We are not going to be protesting. We're not protesters. We're not even counter-protesters. We're going to be people who are cheering in the audience for the speaker. That's it. That's it. I want it to be as clear can be. We are not going there to disrupt. We are going there to support. Others will be there to disrupt. We will be responding to that by supporting the speaker and his right to be heard, his First Amendment right, the Turning Point USA's right to have him there, unabated and distressed, if you will, meaning we're not going to allow them to try to end it early, chase him off the stage, boo him, drown him out. We will be there cheering for him. And we'll find some ways. We'll talk about some things that we'll cheer. We'll talk about some things that we'll chant. We'll talk about some things that we'll sing. And we will make sure we're supporting Kyle Rittenhouse. So if you want to be a part of this crowd, and it is growing, and by the way, it is also growing in law enforcement presence. That's right. I've got cops who have already pulled their registration QR codes off of that page, and they're going to be with us. We're going to make sure we do everything legally and safely and responsibly, which is exactly how it's supposed to be done in America. So if you are not yet on this list, if you have not yet registered, I highly advise you to do it quickly. Always Right Radio is my Facebook page. Can I pin this? I'm going to do it right now. There you go. It is now the pinned post to that page on Facebook, Always Right Radio. It's got a giant picture of an American flag, and it says, I'm gathering as many of my listeners and friends as possible to attend Kyle's speech on April 16th. Who is going with me? Register here and comment below if you're with us. Click that, register, get your QR code. They'll send you an email with it, so you'll have it saved on your phone to show. But make sure if you are a supporter of Kyle, of his life-saving and self-defensive efforts and his free speech, you will join us at Kent State on April 16th. Bill is in Berea. Hi, Bill. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Hey, I just wanted to bring a few things up today. The first one is it baffles me how they could say Trump, you know, evaluated his property and was trying to get more money for it. Every time I've ever had to finance something, the lender has always come out and evaluate your property or your piece of equipment to, and then they decide what it's valued at and you know, what they're going to give you for it. How are they twisting that as if it was something that, you know, like he actually had control over that? And that baffles me.
Well, I mean, you're not baffled. You're right. You are seeing it reasonably and sensibly. They're the ones that are literally twisting it up into a knot in order to go after him. They got a judge to go along with it. There was no jury. This was simply the attorney general, the state of New York, against Donald Trump with only a judge, a radical left-wing judge, by the way, who then listened and said, yeah, he overvalued his property. But as Andrew Napolitano explained, and I played that clip, you're right. Deutsche Bank sent their own appraisers out. Their own auditors, they've evaluated the properties that he put up as securities for his loans, and they said, it's not exactly to the penny, but it's close enough for us. We agree this is what it's worth. And then, by the way, after they made the loans, he paid back every nickel. So they're happy with him as a customer and as a client. There was no one hurt, so that's what makes this so egregious.
And initially, he never had, like you said, there was no trial. He never actually had any proper representation then during the trial either.
No, he did. They argued against it, obviously, but the judge, of course, just listened to Letitia James.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. And then the other thing I want to bring up is something more on a local level. Bernie Marino may be interested in this.
What's that?
Because I think this is a very important issue. Is and something that's brought up every once in a while on your show is the stormwater fee that goes on in Cuyahoga County, and I don't know if it goes in other counties in the state of Ohio or not, but I don't think a lot of people are aware that there is millions of dollars every year sucked out of our school districts just in Cuyahoga County alone for the stormwater fee for the properties that they have. Millions. And you can find this online. It's open to, it's, you know, publicly accessible to see these numbers. And, you know, this is another case here where the sewer district, which has a history of corruption, mind you. If, you know, if people want to do the research, it's there. You can find it online. You know, that they took it upon themselves, again, to go find a far-left judge to approve and give them permission to charge this fee to every property owner in Cuyahoga County. And, you know, they're raking in hundreds of millions of dollars every year just by this fee alone. You know, and once again, in this particular case, none of the property owners, we were never asked for it. We never, you know, we never approved it either, you know. But yet here they are forcing it on property owners' throats. You know,
well, I'll tell you what, I'm not terribly familiar with this, Bill, but I'm glad you brought it up because it's something I would like to look more into and perhaps even have somebody on who can talk about. And thank you for the call and bringing it up here. We'll certainly talk to you too, but to have somebody on to explain this to us in more depth. I'm a little bit out of my depth right now because I'm not familiar with it, but it is certainly something that is of interest to me if it's of interest to Northeast Ohio. Last call of the day. I cannot believe the name I see.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.